Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we are here to do Chapter 10, Halloween. And as always, we are going to start with the chapter summary, which it is my turn to do. So it won't be long like Joe's. So picking up from the last chapter, Harry and Ron connect the trapdoor that Fluffy is guarding with the mysterious package that Harry saw Hagrid take from Gringotts. Neville is too scared to talk about any of it, and Hermione is refusing to speak to them. Harry gets a Nimbus 2000 in the mail, about which both Malfoy and Hermione are upset. My boyfriend Olive Ward explains Quidditch to Harry, and they have an informal practice. On Halloween, the students learn Wingardium Leviosa in charms class, and Harry and Ron bully Hermione. Hermione skips dinner to cry in the bathroom, so when dinner is interrupted by a troll getting loose in the school, Harry and Ron run off to warn, then save, Hermione. They earn house points and become friends. Blanket statement about this chapter, I have a lot of problems with it. We will definitely get into that as we talk about it in more detail, but I think there's some really problematic stuff in this chapter, and I really kind of hate Harry and Ron for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that soon.
Yeah.
But let's talk about, it's probably the first couple lines from the narrator's perspective.
Okay.
It says, Hermione was now refusing to speak to Harry and Ron, but she was such a bossy know-it-all that they saw this as an added bonus. So just the way that this line is written, it sounds like the narrator is butting in to say that Hermione is a bossy know-it-all rather than this is Harry and Ron's opinion.
Yes, I also highlighted this line for different reasons than you. So we'll start by talking about the narrator. And I think we've discussed this a little bit before.
A little bit.
The strange, or not strange, but the narrator is not objective. And that means something in more charged literary terms about objective or omniscient, whatever, narrators and...
Yeah, it's a semi-omniscient.
It is semi-omniscient, and it's mostly, it's a limited omniscient. That's the correct term for sure. It. Where the narrator typically only sees within Harry's head, but it's also partly from Harry's perspective, where this is a value judgment about Hermione's behavior that is not objective at all. And so the narrator is kind of taking on Harry's opinions and perspective, even though it's still from a third person point of view.
Yes.
Yeah. So it is a strange thing. And I disliked this line a lot. And this is part of my larger problems with the chapter, because bossy know-it-all is a really mean thing to say, first of all, which goes along with what you're saying about the narrator being kind of vicious towards Hermione here. But the term bossy, especially, is such a charged term and a coded term for women that you very rarely see men described as bossy.
Mm-hmm.
So applying it to Hermione, especially with Rowling as a female writer, I feel this chapter is very unfair to Hermione as an 11-year-old girl.
Yeah, and she barely comes out looking good.
No,
like, towards
oh, yeah.
the end, like, she does one thing and that's just covering for them.
Yeah, yeah. And thinking about it, and I think we discussed this when Hermione first appeared, that Rowling based Hermione off of herself when she was 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so that helps me excuse using the word bossy to describe Hermione, because if Rowling is looking back on herself and reflecting and saying, like, God, I was a really bossy kid. Like, I can't believe that, you know, other kids tolerated me and they must have been thinking this in their heads. I kind of get that as a self-reflection thing, but I don't like describing Hermione as bossy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, yes, she does kind of, throughout the series, lecture Harry and Ron on why didn't you do your homework? And, like, you should have done this, blah, 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 going on from there. But, like, she's right all the time. So, like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's tricky. But with this being based off of her, this is just a lot of projecting.
Sure.
And
I really hate that word.
No, I understand.
Yeah, I don't want anybody to ever be described as bossy, but especially for women, it's hard because a man's behavior would usually, when the word bossy is thrown around, usually be just described as him being assertive, or even not just that, like, oh, he's just, you know, he's a man. He's allowed to tell people what to do. And then when women do the same thing, it's often like, well, stop being so bossy. Like, get off my butt. Mm. Yeah, yeah. So I had a lot of problems with that line, and it just kind of snowballs throughout the chapter. But before we get to the really problematic stuff in this chapter, McGonagall buys Harry a Nimbus 2000.
Yeah, did she get like a school grant for that?
I want to know that. I want to know where the money came from, and like also both of us being involved in education, we're both studying to become teachers.
There's no money in it.
So like if McGonagall dipped into her own pocket, first of all, like that's not uncommon for teachers, but like you would think she would go for the cheapest thing that she could get, or not.
But she wants to win.
Yeah, so maybe this is embroiled into McGonagall's largest character flaw, which is her obsession with winning Quidditch. But for her to go into her own pocket and buy a top-of-the-line broom is weird. And if she applied for some kind of grant to do this, when you're itemizing like the things you need to buy on a grant, it's like, well, you can save 10 cents by getting the Rose Art markers instead of the Crayola ones. You know, it's like schools are trying to nickel and dime all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And the idea that McGonagall either got a signature off of, I would assume, Dumbledore. I don't think there's like an accounts payable at Hogwarts. And that she like got somebody to sign off on buying a Nimbus 2000 for this student is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
And also then, like, why doesn't the Slytherin team turn around and say, like, well, McGonagall bought this broom for this kid on the Gryffindor team, so why am I not getting a broom from the school? It's just insane.
I mean, it's that plus there's already the rule breaking of first years shouldn't have a broom.
Yes.
First year shouldn't be on the team.
Because Hermione sees them with this broomstick-shaped package, and she's like, so I suppose you think that's a reward for breaking the rules? And, like, that's absolutely the message that McGonagall is sending.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, and, like, to a point, I don't even disagree with the parents that, like, there are parents that have problems with Harry Potter because it promotes witchcraft, which I think is insane. But then there are parents who are like, I don't like Harry Potter because the kids are routinely rewarded and encouraged to break the rules. And I'm like, yeah, kind of. And it's probably never more blatant than in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. And they go out of their way to point it out.
Yes, but it's not, it's pointed out by bossy know-it-all Hermione. Not, it's still like, wow, isn't Harry lucky to have this cool broom? That's the impression that kids are walking away from this from. Not, well, wrong to reward bad behavior.
Well, even, I think Harry says something, he's like, if it wasn't for, you know, Malfoy throwing the Rememberall, you know, I wouldn't be able to get this broom.
Yeah, so Harry is even walking away from it with the wrong impression.
Yeah.
And also, Harry ain't really hurting for money here.
No, like it's not like it didn't need to be bought for him.
No, it's not like he's receiving financial aid here, you know, like buy the Weasleys a broom. Don't buy stinking Harry Potter with his gold galleons in the bank, Nimbus 2000. It's just, it's ridiculous.
Although I don't know if he's, you know, going around telling people, like, I don't know who would know.
I mean, it's worse in the movie because they open the package there at the table and shout, it's a Nimbus 2000. But I think people still know that he has the broom. They're going to see him flying around on it when he goes to Quidditch practice later. Like, they all want to fly around on it, I think. I might be confusing this with a later scene in book 3. But, like, it's known that Harry got this broomstick. Maybe they don't know exactly how he got it. Although Flitwick does say to Malfoy, like, oh, yes, McGonagall told me about the special circumstances here.
Yeah.
And you know that Malfoy is prancing around like, well, Potter gets special treatment here.
Well, I love that immediately Malfoy is just trying to tattle on him to the first teacher that walks by.
It's really good. Yeah. When you think about it, Draco and Hermione are not portrayed terribly differently in this chapter. Aside from the ending, there are problems here.
Although Malfoy is barely in this chapter.
Yeah. Especially coming off of the Midnight Duel chapter, which is such a Malfoy heavy chapter.
Yeah.
He's mentioned in the first like two pages, and then he's gone for the rest of the chapter.
So in the movie, yeah, they just unwrap the broom right on the table.
Yeah.
And there is no letter to go along with it.
Right, yes. But it does show McGonagall, like, winking and petting Hedwig. So you're like, all right, I can kind of deduce what's going on here.
Yeah. But kudos to Harry Potter for opening the letter first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So in the book, to give a little more context here, he gets the package and there's a letter attached and it says, do not open this at the table, even though it is a, I mean, I guess I'm going off the movie's image here, and this scene has been kind of made fun of a lot because there's this wrapped package on the table and they're
and
like,
it's just like newspaper
around. Yeah, they're
a
like, what do you think it is? Like, it's very clearly a broomstick. So like,
but
maybe,
it might have been a box.
Maybe the wrapping is a little more, you know, inconspicuous in the book, or at least in Rowling's vision of it. But yeah, definitely credit to Harry, because I mean, he's 11, so he's a little bit older, but most children, when they see a big wrap package, are just gonna tear at it.
Yeah, especially the way it was dropped off,
multiple owls
come. Yeah, well, the broomstick was dropped off first, and then afterwards the owl swooped by and dropped off a letter.
Interesting. All right.
So he paused for at least a second to look at it. And that was enough time to say, oh, I guess I should open the letter first.
And also, it's dropped onto the table in the Great Hall, which is usually filled with food.
Yeah, it does knock off his bacon.
Oh, okay. Okay, so they do address that a little bit. Okay, fair enough. All right. So Harry and Ron spend the day, like, all excited, like, I can't wait to unwrap the broom upstairs. I just want to fly around on it, blah, blah, blah. They have, and Harry and Oliver Wood meet at the Quidditch pitch, and Harry finally gets to fly around on it, and Oliver Wood is like, oh, you're a natural. And I don't have much to say about this scene, aside from my boyfriend Oliver Wood being in it, because it's just like, oh, these are the rules of Quidditch, and I think that Quidditch is boring. So I don't really care to discuss too much about this stuff unless you do.
No, we just get the like basic rules, and we even have Harry repeating and simplifying it for us.
Yes. Yeah.
The only note I have here is that Charlie is a dragon chaser.
Yes. I also pulled out this line because Oliver Wood, my boyfriend Oliver Wood, says something along the lines of, oh, you know, we'll have the House Cup this year. You might even end up being better than Charlie Weasley. And he could have played for England if he didn't go off chasing dragons.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if our reasons are the same for pulling out this line, but chasing the dragon is a euphemism for inhaling heroin.
Inhaling?
Yes. So, as I understand it, you know, like the idea of like an opium den where like you're inhaling like the vapors, and this is apparently how it worked in like ancient China. So it's kind of a racist term in a way, too. The idea is that, like, when you, I don't know, boil heroin, I don't know how it works. When you, like, cook heroin.
I'm going to say, let's not get into this.
Okay, but when you cook heroin in a certain way, the smoke rises and people inhale it. And the smoke, people feel it follows a dragon-like pattern. And because heroin and opium are associated with China, that is chasing the dragon. So this is a larger euphemism for just doing drugs. So I feel this was kind of irresponsible wording on Rowling's part for a book about 11-year-olds that is geared towards children.
I don't think she was doing that on purpose.
It's such like a common and like known term that even if she wasn't doing this on purpose and trying to be funny or anything, or being like, oh, he went and did something so controversial and weird, like, I still feel like it's kind of irresponsible. Why did you pull out this line?
So the while the wording might seem problematic, it is just like, here's a little taste of, oh, what is Charlie doing?
Sure.
He's just chasing dragons somewhere.
Right.
And it does, like, it does get expanded on later in the book.
Yeah. So it operates as a bit of foreshadowing here as well. So maybe the drug references were unintended. Maybe
I'm
going to
say they were 100% unintended.
We'll have to tweet at J.K. Rowling and ask her.
I don't need the lore to change again.
But Dragon Chaser, I feel like there's definitely like a YA literature series called Dragon Chaser.
There are a lot of books. There's a good chance at this point.
I think 100% there is, or there will be by the time we put this episode up.
Oh, in like 3 years, you mean?
Yeah, probably. So on from there, it just kind of says like, oh, Harry is busy. And there's a bit of a time jump. It's not as serious as some of the others in the books, like the 10-year time jump between the first chapter and the second chapter. But there's a bit of a time jump. They're like, oh, time passes and now it's Halloween. So it's the end of October. They've been in school for a while. Harry is like, oh, I'm glad I kind of know the basics now. My lessons are getting more exciting. All that stuff. I did do a little research to find out if Halloween in England is as weird as it is in the U.S. with children dressing up in costumes and knocking on strangers' doors and asking for candy.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it is.
Well, yeah.
I don't know where that custom comes from.
Really?
I don't. Yeah. What?
You did research.
My research was, what is Halloween like in England?
Okay. Off the top of my head, you would dress up to blend in with spirits so that they wouldn't attack you. And that was mixed with a different holiday where you would give out fruit or something like that.
I can't wait to get emails about the origins of Halloween.
Or we could just like Google it.
Yeah, I mean, but who has the time? So
everyone.
Halloween is a strange concept to me. And I feel like actually Halloween is changing too. Or I don't know if this is an area specific thing. Apparently now, like, there's a block of time in which trick or treating is allowed and you don't trick or treat past that. And like, first of all, how is that communicated? And secondly, like, what the heck? You know, when I was a child, it was you race home from school and then go straight out to get the candy.
You trick or treat on your way home from school.
Oh. That is maximum efficiency.
You bring a costume with you. If you're allowed to wear a costume, you wear it that day.
Okay. We usually weren't allowed to wear costumes to school.
Okay. Well, you trick-or-treat home from school, and then you continue those trick-or-treating.
Oh, man. I never even thought of that.
And you get to trick-or-treat until, depending on how old you are, you trick-or-treat until your parents bring you in, or when there are no lights on in the house, you don't bother knocking on the door.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the cutoff.
These are pro tips.
I like candy.
We're way off topic now. So they go to charms class and Harry puts out a fire with his hat.
Yes.
Yeah. Seamus sets the feather on fire that they're trying to levitate using Wingardium Leviosa.
And I always forget that I guess they're always wearing their wizard hat.
This is why I pulled out this line, because like that's something that, you know, again, the movies have kind of interfered with how we envision the series and the characters, that they're wearing hats all the time. Like, and for all intents and purposes, their cloaks, they've described them as being able to like pull them over your head and wear them like that. So they're kind of just dresses.
Like big ponchos.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're wearing hats and big ponchos. it's weird when you get that reminder sometimes that like, oh, it's not like how the movies showed it to me all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the movies makes those changes because it would be ridiculous if they were wearing hats and big ponchos all the time. But yeah,
they could make it work.
It is startling to remember that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that it makes me sad a little bit about the movies. And I have a real affection for like the art surrounding Harry Potter before the movies came out, because all of it was so radically transformed by the movies, by the images that you see in the movies and like how mm-hmm. Hogwarts is portrayed and all of that. So I kind of miss that era where it was up to the artist to kind of translate and envision Harry Potter and Hogwarts and all of these magical items.
Yeah, it makes me think about when books are re-released after a movie comes mm-hmm. out and it's just got photos yes. from the movie.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Ryan Gosling's in this book.
Yeah. Yeah. My copy of Fellowship of the Ring just had Elijah Wood on the cover. I remember that. Yeah. And it's kind of sad to me. And with the Harry Potter series, they have re-released them with new covers, which I have mixed feelings about a lot of these new covers. I really like the original art that Mary Grand Prix did for the American covers. And I like some of the English covers as well. Some of them. But I love actually the Deathly Hallows cover for the UK release of it. I don't know if you've seen it, but I really love it. But yeah, it's just kind of unfortunate the way that the movies have tainted our perception of what's going on in the books.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe for the better, like with the cloaks and hats things, it lets you take it a little more seriously. But sometimes I think it's for the worse.
And I think it's especially stronger for me because I watched the movie. I watched all the movies before I read any of the book.
I mean, I had watched the first movie before I read any of the books, so I still would base everything off of that.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, some of the later things that like when I was ahead of the movies and like a new place was introduced, I got to envision that first.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I was always going back to that first movie for many of the core things.
Yeah.
So the charms lesson kind of proceeds. I don't have too much to say about that. I don't know if you do.
So
like we all know the scene. Hermione lectures Ron and tells him how to levitate the feather, and that's what happens.
That's what happens. Seamus sets a feather on fire, and yes. That's why Harry has to put out a fire with his hat.
Mm-hmm.
There is an emphasis on pronunciation and hand movement.
Yeah.
So we get to see kind of how magic works in a very basic sense of like, you can't just decide, oh, this is what's going to happen when I wave my wand and say some words. But my biggest note is Hermione, you know, is snobby and saying,
okay,
oh, this is how you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it wrong.
I don't think she's necessarily snobby. This is why teachers use group work, so that you can teach others how to do it. But proceed.
Well, from Ron's perspective, she's being very snobby.
Much better. Go on.
And from the narrator's perspective.
Okay.
So Ron tries to shut her down, just like, oh, why don't you do it?
Yeah.
And she does it immediately.
Perfectly.
And I like the idea that she sat back. I don't know how long the scene was playing out before she did anything, but she just sat back and watched everyone fail for a few minutes before, like, okay, now I'll do it.
I mean, because
now that we've set the stakes up.
Yes, because as much as I disagree with some of the characters and the narrator's reactions and words and language against Hermione in this chapter, she is on occasion a bit of a show.
Like, I'm picturing her, you know, hands behind her head, just like, nope, that's not how you do it.
I mean, I like to think that it was more of, I know how to do this and I know I'm right, so I would rather sit back and let everybody else have an opportunity to try and not feel bad because I'm doing it and they're not.
I mean, you could make that even better and say, well, I'm sure I can do this. Let's make sure Ron can.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I like to think that those are Hermione's intentions and that she was not sitting with her hands behind her head leaning back. And also, let's be real, Hermione sits ramrod straight at all times.
Yes. Perfectly upright.
Yes.
90 degree angle.
Yes. Ankles crossed all the time.
Ankles crossed.
Yeah. That's how a lady sits.
Okay.
Have you not seen The Princess Diaries?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Good.
I think I've seen
our
both.
Next podcast will be about The Princess Diaries. So they leave the lesson and Ron goes off on Hermione. He is so mean.
I think he had like two lines.
Okay, but he's really mean.
But yes, they were not nice.
I feel like all the time also in this book, and perhaps the entire series, Ron is always the one to talk mess about Hermione. Like, he always initiates it. And Harry sometimes participates, other times he's kind of like, yeah, yeah. But Ron just, like, goes in on her.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's mean. And so Hermione overhears Ron being a little brat and bullying her and runs off crying. And Harry is like, oh, I think she might have heard you. And Ron just says, so? She must have noticed she doesn't have any friends. It is so mean. It really is.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
And I numbered my list of reasons that I have problems with this scene. First of all, Ron's comment kind of feels like, so? She's asking for it. Like, have you seen the way that she's acting? Like,
yeah, which
is a problem. Secondly, I feel like he's promoting this idea that you bully people to kind of police their behavior, that if somebody is not adhering to the social norms that you expect or not acting the way that you want, you bully them to get them to act the way that you want. Like, I don't know if you experience this, but like sometimes, at least I experienced this in like middle school or high school, when there was somebody in the friend group that like one person really liked and the other people just kind of tolerated, and other people would like bully them for like the comments that they made and not acting the way that everybody else in the friend group would act.
I don't know
if that makes sense. It really bothers me. I really hated this line, and I still deeply, deeply love Ron Weasley, but it really bugged me.
But this is a very middle school thing.
Sure. Yeah. Like, I have to remember they're 11-year-old fictional characters, but
yeah.
Also, reason number three, I had no friends in school, and this is mean. Because, like, I really ultimately don't think that Hermione is necessarily at fault for having no friends. I don't think it's true that she has no friends, because she's friends with Neville. I really feel for Hermione in these scenes.
No, absolutely.
And it's sad to, in a sense, like, I get that Ron is saying it as, like, she must know that her behavior is unacceptable because nobody wants to be her friend. And maybe if he had said it that way, it would be a little better. But, like, also kind of bullying her for having no friends is totally, it's almost like a double negative. You know, and I used to be bullied for this on the playground. I really remember really vividly. I'm not going to name names. But this one girl coming up to me on the playground, because I was playing alone. She's like, don't you have any friends? Like, what are you doing playing alone? And I'm just like, I'm just like being me. And, you know, like in elementary school, which is when this happened, I did actually have friends. They were just playing with other people.
Okay.
And just like bullying somebody for having no friends, like that just, it's so mean. Like, to me, when I see somebody who has no friends or isn't fitting in a social situation, my reaction is to include that person.
Yeah.
You know, like say like, oh, you know, what do you think about this? Or like, you know, what have you been up to lately? Like, bring them in, be kind and welcoming. And like, yeah, it's middle school, but God.
Well, you know, the best way to make friends.
What?
Get into life-threatening situations and survive.
Okay, but I have more problems before that.
Okay.
So Hermione runs off crying, and she cries in the bathroom alone. And then Lavender, like, later on, it's a thing where, like, they're at dinner, and Hermione's not there, and Lavender is like, oh, I heard her crying in the bathroom. And Lavender does nothing about it.
No. So they're on their way to dinner, and Pavarti was telling Lavender, like, Hermione's still crying in there, and she wanted to be left alone. Like, it sounds like Pavarti said something.
Okay,
and
that's fair.
Hermione said, you know, give me some space.
Okay. And I wanted to bring this up. Have you ever heard somebody crying in, like, a public bathroom?
No.
Okay. I was curious about this. I didn't think that you would have that experience because toxic masculinity and everything. But I have been in a situation kind of like this. Once upon a time, when I was in community college, I was on the toilet doing my business. And somebody burst into the bathroom, and this bathroom that I used was kind of isolated, which is why I would go there to do my business. There were only two stalls, and so I'm in one stall going to the bathroom, and one girl kind of like runs in, and I hear her sobbing, and of course I'm sitting there pooping and like thinking like, oh my god, what do I do? And thankfully, it felt like an eternity to me, but it was probably like 20 seconds. Thankfully, a friend of hers ran in and like went to comfort her. But like, I've been in situations too where I've heard somebody crying in the bathroom, like other times in public bathrooms. And I just like, I always wonder what to do in those situations. Like,
for the most part, I feel like if they're in the next stall, maybe.
What? Why does that change it?
Like if there's someone else in the bathroom aside from the two of you,
make it their responsibility.
No, but like, don't call over them. Like, hey, are you okay? I feel like.
Well, if I had in the situation that I described in detail, if I had like if her friend hadn't come in, I think I would have decided to say something. Mm-hmm. I would have waited until I was off the toilet.
Yes, don't like
I would have
between,
shouted over the stall, but I probably would have just like knocked on the door and said like, "Hey, is everything okay?"
Yeah, wash your hands first.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Comfort people.
Yeah, it's just I haven't. Like I said, I've been in situations since then where I've heard somebody crying in the bathroom, and like every time there were circumstances, like the person left before I was done using the bathroom or whatever. But yeah, I always wonder like what to do in a situation like that. And I think about it a lot, maybe because I am a woman and this is more common in women's bathrooms. But yeah, like I knowing that what you've said about Pavarti, that she did reach out to Hermione, I give Pavarti a lot of credit as a character because we don't really know too much about Pavarti at this point or ever. So I give her credit for reaching out to Hermione and saying like, you know, is everything okay? I don't think that, you know, seeing a crying Hermione saying like, just leave me alone, Pavarti should have left her alone, but I still give Pavarti credit.
Yeah. And we don't know the whole story of what happened. We get one line saying, yeah. Oh, she's in there. She wanted to be left alone.
Yeah, I can't imagine that nobody
and
else used that
she,
bathroom and heard that.
Well, but also she's the youngest grade,
uh-huh.
So it could have been, oh, like a seventh year in there,
sure,
not wanting to deal with it.
But to me, the perspective then would be like, God, I remember when I was 11 and I first came to this school and, you know, it's hard to suddenly be thrown into this group of kids where you maybe don't know anybody. Like, it's hard. It's really hard. And you're under pressure from school, maybe pressure from your parents. Like, I would want to reach out to that person and try to comfort her. As a 17-year-old, hearing an 11-year-old crying, like, I would feel obligated to do something about that as, like, a not authority figure to them, but an older figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just, it really upsets me that nobody would have gone to Hermione and comforted her, or that people would just kind of, like, ignore it and be like, whatever, it's somebody else's problem, you know?
Yeah, or potentially, like, I have no idea how many bathrooms there are.
That's true, and that's also something that's very unclear about Hogwarts, like, showering and stuff. Yeah, it just, I think there's a lot of really sad things about Hermione in this chapter. Like, I think we mentioned before that her birthday is in September, I think. So she spends her first birthday at Hogwarts without, like, really any friends. And I really feel for Hermione. And maybe I'm projecting a little bit myself. But yeah, it makes me really sad to think about Hermione alone crying in the bathroom and nobody really stopping to help her.
Mm-hmm.
On another note, Percy delivers the most Percy line possibly of all time. He says, "Excuse me, I'm a prefect." It's very good. I enjoyed that a lot. But back to the life-threatening situation that Joe brought up, or moving on to the life-threatening situation. Quirrell runs into the dining hall, the Great Hall, and he's like, "Oh, there's a troll in the dungeon," and everybody... it goes crazy for a minute, and then the prefects start to, like, lead people to their dormitories. And Harry and Ron on the way
go
on.
So, yeah, moving from she's crying in the bathroom right mm-hmm. now, and they're going off to the Great Hall for dinner. They overhear that conversation between Pavarti and Lavender.
Okay.
And, you know, it says, oh, Ron looked a little guilty or uneasy or something. And immediately they open the door, see all the food, and, oh...
yes.
Forget.
And I'm going to talk about that a little later, too, because I have more problems with Harry and Ron past just they bully Hermione.
But some of the decoration that stood out to me was 1,000 live bats.
Just flying around the Great Hall.
Yeah, they said, like, clouds, basically, yeah. They were forming.
And bats fly... oh, wait, they're blind. Never mind. How do bats know when it's nighttime?
So they're not actually blind, but because they hunt at night, they have limited use of their sight.
So it's easier for them to hunt at night?
It's easier for them to use echolocation when hunting at night.
Why?
I'm not sure. Well, like, versus trying to see at night, it's easier to use echolocation.
But, like, why would it, if they're just able to use echolocation, if they have very limited sight, why does it make a difference if it's night or day?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
They might be sensitive to the light, but that also might just be evolution.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just wondering, like, why bats would be flying around in what we would probably assume would be, like, a lit up Great Hall.
Well, with the changing sky, they might have just made it.
Yeah.
Nighttime.
Or they could be doing, like, a spooky thing with Halloween, you know?
That was the reason there were 1,000 bats.
Yeah.
In there.
Okay. All right. Let's move on from the bats. Do you have any other decorations that caught your attention?
No, I was just thinking about, like, if there are 1,000 live bats in there, like, are they just spell bats? Did Hagrid round up a bunch of bats?
I think Hagrid definitely rounded up a bunch of bats.
all over the food?
I feel like
Filch have to clean it up?
I feel like there was a staff meeting and they're like, who's in charge of decorations for Halloween? And Hagrid was like, listen, I know that you guys usually use magic bats, but there are live bats and I can bring them.
I can get a hold of some bats if you need some bats.
Yeah. And, so
and he was
like,
oh, yeah.
They're like, yeah, they said, get a couple bats. And he brings 1,000. Yeah. That is canon as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. So, yeah, Quirrell bursts in. There's a troll in dungeon. The way it's written, it seems like he just kind of gasped it on Dumbledore's table.
Yes,
I don't know how everyone.
He collapses in front of the table and, like, whimpers. Troll in the dungeon.
Yeah, so how everyone heard it, or it was just like the closest people heard it and they started screaming.
I mean, I would imagine that the kids in the Great Hall would see him, like, running up to, well, this is a larger issue of where the entrances are in the Great Hall, which we've discussed at length before, but I imagine they would see, like, Quirrell running up to the table and collapsing in front of it and just, like, get real quiet.
Mm-hmm. But then in the chaos to calm everyone down, Dumbledore is, like, gavel basically is just purple fireworks in the air.
Yes.
I just thought that was very entertaining.
I mean, yeah, that'll get people's attention. And like, you have magic, so you don't need to do like 1, 2, 3 eyes on me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I hate those things. So in the process of being led to their dormitories, Harry and Ron realize that Hermione doesn't know that there's a troll loose because she's crying in the bathroom and they need to go save her. And like, this is a question that's posed a lot within Harry Potter, and I don't always agree with it. But like, why would Harry and Ron not notify an adult that Hermione is like, I think that there is a larger running theme, not theme maybe, but running thing in Harry Potter where Harry has a mistrust of adult and authority of figures. And we can definitely understand why even at this point in the book, because he's been raised by the Dursleys. So like, he doesn't think like, oh, wrongdoing, let me find an adult. But that Harry and Ron's reaction is to run off and go take care of it themselves, I think is a lapse in judgment.
In their defense, they are thinking the troll is in the dungeon still. They're thinking, okay, let's go run, tell Hermione. Because potentially she could be losing house points for not being where she's supposed to be.
I also think that part of it is that if they go to an adult and say Hermione doesn't know she's in the bathroom
because we bullied her and she's crying.
Yeah, like that's the extension of it. I mean, I don't think that a teacher would necessarily ask like, why is she in the bathroom? But like, they're gonna have to dance around that fact. And I think that part of them doesn't want to admit fault for Hermione missing dinner because she's in the bathroom crying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, they're really unlikable in this chapter to me. So they get to the bathroom. Well, no, they don't get to the bathroom. They see the troll enter a room and then they lock it in that room thinking like, oh, yes, we just stopped the troll. And then they realize it's the bathroom that Hermione is in.
Yeah, so they're on their way to the girls' bathroom. They know where the girls' bathroom is.
They know which bathroom that she's in, because I have to assume there's more than one bathroom in Hogwarts.
So they know exactly where they're going to, or they're running around checking every bathroom.
And then they like just forget that when the troll walks in.
Yeah. They lock the only door it goes into and don't think, hey, that's where we were going.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Like, I get it. You're very afraid, so your mind kind of blanks out.
I mean, it might have been like an adrenaline moment of like, oh, of like, the troll's in there. I can
save the day.
Yeah. So they are like walking away, patting themselves on the back, completely just like not even like, oh, wait,
we don't have
what
to get Hermione anymore. We saved the day.
But then they hear a scream and they're like, oh, wait, the bathroom. And so they run in and Ron calls the troll Pea Brain to get its attention. And I have to tell another personal anecdote. As children, my siblings and I thought that pea brain was maybe the funniest insult that could ever exist, behind perhaps only poopy head, to the point where we made it our Neopets password. So that's a little glimpse into life in the 90s or early 2000s, I guess it would have been by that point. But yeah. So if you want to hack into my Neopets account and feed my Neopets, the password is PeaBrain.
Username is Hermione.
Yes. Hermione Granger did nothing wrong. So Harry and Ron fight the troll.
So here's where most of my time went.
I have some problems with the scene too, but I'll let you go first.
So they say multiple times, this is a 12-foot troll.
Yes. I know where you're going.
And so I did a little bit of math. The average 11-year-old boy is about 4'10".
This is why you asked me how long my arms are.
Yes, and then I proceeded to measure your arms.
Because I'm
Cassie
about the size of an average 11-year-old. Yeah.
Cassie is 5'2". So even if we went with...
like a tall 11-year-old.
Yeah. So Cassie would be an above average 11-year-old boy. But so with 4'10", Cassie's arms were about 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But like reaching up, she's got, it was 16 inches of reach. But we'll say just a foot and a half. Shut up.
Yes. Okay, go on.
So he jumps onto the troll's back.
Yes.
This 12-foot tall troll.
And wraps his arms around its neck.
Yeah. So with his arms fully extended, giving him like a 2-foot
reach. Yeah.
On his 4'10 body.
Optimistically,
he can only really reach up
6 feet.
Yeah, about.
So Harry leaps 6 feet into the air.
But we'll say what is you're wrapping your arms around his neck.
Okay, so we can maybe like say take away a foot for the head. Yeah.
So about 5 feet in the air.
Yeah.
So more than his own height.
Yes.
He's jumping, but also that would be just to get his fingers. He's got his whole arm around them to the point where he's got a wand up the troll's nose.
Yes.
So I think my conclusion is Harry has hops.
What are hops?
Hops. He jumps very high.
Okay. I thought that was another drug reference. Aren't hops a drug?
You make beer with hops.
What am I thinking of?
Hops.
I think I'm thinking of whippets. yes. So I think that, I mean, he's flawless, but I think that my boyfriend Oliver Wood might have made a mistake in making Harry a seeker, because Harry clearly should be playing for the Hogwarts basketball team if he is able to leap
in
five
this
feet
very
in
chapter.
The air. Yes, I know.
Oliver Wood shows to not know what basketball is.
Yes, but it.
There is no Hogwarts basketball.
Harry performs an inhuman feat in this chapter, and it is not at all addressed. it's very
blank. Just somehow.
Yes. Yeah. But like, it's not even like somehow. It's just completely thrown away. It's just like Harry. There's a good line here that I like a lot. Harry then did something that was both very brave and very stupid, which I think is like a summary of the entire series. but it says that, and then he runs at the troll and jumps and wraps his arms around his neck.
Yeah.
It's just like completely thrown away like that. It's not.
Well, but they have the somehow in there, and he runs at the troll and somehow wraps his arms around his neck. So it's the mom lifting a car
they're at
off
magic
a baby.
School. Like, I get it. Like, they're at magic school, so we can't apply like physics to this.
They're not using magic right now.
But they can unintentionally use magic.
Yeah, especially with your emotions and they're untrained.
Yeah,
okay.
So like maybe his adrenaline reaction being a wizard is he can leap unnatural heights. But I mean, J.K. Rowling has said that she is bad at math, so this might be another math issue at hand here. But like, that's the nice thing about Harry Potter is that a lot of this stuff can be explained away by like, it's magic. Like, there's magic. So yeah, but it is jarring as a reader to be looking at this in detail like we are and seeing him jump like this.
Yes
Harry
has hops.
Okay. I just wrote for that Harry jumps 12 feet in the air. So they beat the troll. Ron uses Wingardium Leviosa and gets his hero moment, even though it's ruined by how awful he is in the rest of the chapter and him causing the exact situation that they have to respond to. He saves the day by, you know, using Wingardium Leviosa and knocking out the troll. And all the teachers rush in. And they're like, what's going on here? And Quirrell has a reaction that I really, really like. I wrote down the quote. Quirrell took one look at the troll, let out a faint whimper, and sat quickly down on a toilet, clutching his heart. It just made me laugh. I think that's a really good image.
Are the stalls still set? Did the troll get rid of all the stalls in this process?
This is another difficult thing. Like, did he run into a stall, open the door, turn around, and sit down on the toilet?
Or was there just like a stray toilet?
Maybe.
On the
floor?
Like
a toilet that had been like knocked across the room.
But like it landed upright.
Sure.
And in one piece.
Yeah, it again,
was it closed when he sat on the toilet?
Again, it's magic school. Like, whatever.
Personally, I've never been into a public bathroom that had a top seat. Like,
what?
When you're at home, a lot of... Yeah, like a lid.
Yeah, a lid, not a top seat.
Well, you know what I mean.
Go on. I mean, but you can still sit down on the toilet.
Yeah, but then you're just sitting on the regular... Like, if I was going to sit in the bathroom and not actually use the bathroom, I would just...
You would sit on the top seat.
I would sit on the top seat. That's why it's called a top seat.
But what does this have to do with anything?
It's funny to picture Quirrell sitting on a toilet.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's why, again, I pulled out this line. Harry at first gets really excited when the teachers rush in because they're like, they're going to see how good we did. and maybe I'll get some house points. And this is why token reinforcement systems do not work, because then children think, I'm going to do something good so that I get the reward for it, not I'm going to do something good because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, immediately he's like, I'm getting 50 house points.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be the hero of Gryffindor House. We're going to win the House Cup because I defeated the troll, even though Ron did all the work. And it says exactly, Harry, like, thinks that he is going to earn the house points. He is going to earn them. It's a problem. Harry is the worst. No, Ron is the worst in this chapter, but Harry is pretty bad, too. And Hermione does the thing that gets Harry and Ron to finally like her. She lies to the teachers and says that she was hunting the troll and that's why she was in the bathroom. And I hate it. She also says directly, Harry stuck his wand up the troll's nose and Ron knocked it out. As if these are equal contributions to the thing. Like, as if Harry sticking his wand up the nose had anything to do with defeating the troll.
He jumped pretty high.
Yeah. I mean, you have to reward that.
Yes. But 5 house points.
But, like, when Harry and Ron are walking back, like, reeling from this experience, Harry says, she might not have needed saving if we hadn't locked the thing in with her. Or if you hadn't bullied her into crying in the bathroom. They never feel guilt for this.
That's exactly what I have written down.
Yeah.
I feel like in the movie, they bring up the, I don't remember though, so
I'm trying to remember what the scene is. I don't remember the movie either. I guess we can talk about it, because I think we're gonna have to do like a movie episode where we compare the book to the movie and everything.
Yeah, eventually.
But like, there's never any retribution for that. It's just Hermione lies to cover up what happened in the bathroom, which, like, sure, she doesn't want to admit I was here crying in the bathroom, but like, Harry and Ron never pay for or apologize for how they treated Hermione.
Yes.
It's really problematic to me. It really bothers me. Because, I mean, I like the idea that they come together at the end of the chapter. They realize, like, hey, we're not so different. Hey, we misjudged her. But, like, there's never, like, that a really clear, explicit moment of them realizing even just, like, hey, we were a little hard on her. Like, nothing like that.
Yeah.
It really
especially
bothers me.
This kind of treatment, while lessened, continues.
Yeah. Yes. Ron especially continues throughout the book to be really hard on Hermione, and it's really mean. And it...
My only thought was this could be a... I was thinking this could be like a calculated move on Hermione's part, because she could have thrown the two of them under the bus, but she might have been thinking, hey, two people getting house points is better than one person getting house points and two people losing house points.
Or she could have been thinking, if I throw them under the bus, they're going to bully me even worse.
Potentially. Or it could be all about winning the House Cup.
I would expect that of Hermione to be like, oh, if I tell the truth, we're not going to win. Because Hermione loves winning, I think. I really don't like that there's no resolution to this. That Harry and Ron are never called out for their behavior. That, in a sense, it's just kind of excused.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see what you think about this, because I'm not sure about it myself. Do you think this is kind of a damsel in distress moment? Like, do we believe that... I'm sure Hermione was surprised by the troll and everything, and I get that she was scared, but Hermione is a capable witch. Would she just do nothing? Like, would she be in need of saving in this scene?
Well, the problem with that is... we don't know if she has her wand on her.
That's true. That's a good point.
But in the act of them going in and trying to rescue her, she is just like pinned up against the wall. She's not stuck against the wall. She's just frozen in fear.
But knowing, of course, we have to acknowledge that we're looking at this as people who know, you know, what happens in these books. We know these characters already. Knowing Hermione and who she is, do you think that she would just freeze in fear in a moment like this? I mean, maybe she was just like already emotional and everything, but I know Hermione as a capable person who can operate under pressure really calmly.
But this shows she wasn't always that way.
Okay. Okay. So you're saying it's a character growth thing, that she's that way later on.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
You kind of have to take this at face value.
Okay. Yeah.
Because this is the first book.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
You're going, this is my experience with Hermione.
Right.
at the moment.
Okay.
She is frozen in fear.
Yeah. Like I said,
that frozen in fear could have occurred after she noticed the troll, mm-hmm. snuck to the door, twisted the handle, couldn't move it.
Yeah, saw that it was locked. Yeah. Yeah.
And then realized, oh, who knows what's going to happen.
Although Hermione did here. Just use Alohomora in the chapter before. So, yeah, like I said, I don't know how I feel. I don't feel comfortable labeling this as a damsel in distress scene. And I think that it's okay for women to need saving as long as that's not all they do. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is not like a repeated trend with Hermione, that more often than not, she saves Ron and Harry. So, yeah, I don't feel comfortable labeling it as that, but I wanted to bring it up. And then finally, I think, you know, despite my problems with this chapter, I think that the last line is very sweet. It says, "There are some things you can't share without ending up liking each other, and knocking out a 12-foot mountain troll is one of them." I've said before that I think that the prose in this chapter is a little more childish than I remember. And it definitely has like some kind of storybook vibe. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way or anything. I think that it's just it's evident a lot that it is geared towards young adults, like mm-hmm. preteens and younger, even though I think it does still fall into like the YA lit category. It does dip into children's literature, especially with this first book. But yeah, and I think that line shows that, but I still really like the line. I think it's really sweet. And I just recently started reading The Hobbit, and I was very surprised at how The Hobbit has a similar kind of vibe. And knowing that Rowling borrows a lot from Tolkien, I saw a connection there. Mm-hmm.
And moving on to Spell of the Week, the star of this chapter was Wingardium
Webiosa.
Wingardium Leviosa, which is the levitation spell.
Yes, different from the hover charm.
Yes, mm-hmm. in that I think hover just makes it stay there, mm-hmm. While
you can move
Wingardium
it.
Leviosa, yeah. You can move it around. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Does not function on humans.
Okay, interesting.
The origin of this, and I don't know at what point these were all written, but they're all very bizarre.
This is some of the stuff that people have problems with, because J.K. Rowling like coming out with like this whole story after the fact, and people are like, do we really need this? There are other things that people have reasons for
this one,
good reasons,
especially.
But, yeah,
I don't even know if I want you to keep it in there.
Okay, but just say it.
So the creator of this was trying to fly, was trying to get himself to fly. So he got a crowd together, stood on a church roof, and cast the charm on himself.
Okay.
He then leapt into the air and hovered there.
I thought you said it doesn't work on humans.
Well, he stood there motionless, or he floated there motionless, and people started booing. And he, in a panic, thought his clothes were weighing him down, so he took them all off and then fell to the floor with his clothes still floating there. He had casted the charm onto his clothes and not himself. But was unable to fly around.
I hate that.
Yes.
Oh my god. I don't even want to give that the credit, yes. of talking about it. Ugh.
I don't want it in there.
I mean, I'm gonna put it in there, but
no,
yuck.
It's bad.
But like, people have to know that there's this bad stuff in there. We're not just like blind Harry Potter fans.
It's bad.
It's really bad. All right, so that's Spell of the Week.
Well, yeah, it's a very simple spell. Technically a charm. Mm-hmm. The name of it is
Wing Fly.
Well, the name of it is the levitation spell.
Okay. Yeah.
But everyone refers to it as Wingardium Leviosa.
Right.
Just because.
Yeah.
You know, that's what everyone remembers. No one's gonna remember the simple name. Levitation spell.
Yeah, I can't get causes over how
objects.
Stupid that story is.
Just take it out.
I'm not going to.
Ugh. Causes objects to float in the air. Does not function on humans. Some of the sites I looked at mentioned that it functioned on small children and animals. It's very unreliable sources.
Well, yes, because a small child is an object, of course.
Yes, it only functions on objects, and you're not an object.
Yeah,
you turn
also
eight.
Women. Ugh, you made me hate this spell.
It's horrible. So moving on to Spell of the Week.
What?
The star of...
We're not redoing this again.
I just don't want it in there.
It's going to be in there.
Don't leave it in there.
Yeah, that's Spell of the Week. you're going to have to deal with the realities of the Harry Potter canon, unfortunately. and that wraps up our episode, I guess. We're going to have to end on that stinker. You can review us on iTunes. That really helps us out, or on whatever podcast service you use. I look at the iTunes ones. I don't know how to look at the other ones because I don't know where else there are podcast reviews, but go ahead and review us, please. We don't have any emails this week, but you can send us an email to owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. That is owlpost at symbol. Does that have like a real name? Okay. At symbol. Podtrificus, PodTrificus, totalis, TALUS.com. I hate that I spell this every time.
Why?
I don't know. Just look at the name of the podcast. Yeah, you found it. You know how to spell it. All right. So email us at owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. You can send us corrections on things that we've messed up on, because I'm sure we've messed up on stuff.
You can tell us all about
how much you hate the backstory for Wingardium Leviosa.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Halloween and how much I got
so
wrong.
So engage with us, talk with us. We like that. We are on social media. We're on Twitter at Podtrificus. Facebook, we have a page. Just search again the name of the podcast, Podtrificus Totalis. Those are really the only ones that I check. but there are other things too. Those are the important ones. And of course, our website, podtrificustotalis.com, where we have detailed show notes and links to all this other stuff. And you can email us from there if you can't figure out how to send an email. And you can find us on all podcast services. So, you know, please subscribe to us. You know, smash that like button, what have you.
There are no like buttons.
Okay, it's a joke. And you can join us for Chapter 11,
Quidditch.